Salamini for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a rocket. Trimboli. What vision.
Math blasts.
Yes. And Zich.
Miljevic.
Beautiful ball.
Here's Mazanic.
Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
George Kotsanis, good evening. It's George Danikian, and we have a guest in the studio because it's our favourite time of the week. We keep saying it every week.
Every Thursday,
the Pioneers is our show.
Good evening,
and
Georgie.
We love it, and you've come up with yet another gem. I don't know how you managed to do it. It could well be that you've played enough football in your time to you can identify talent, but you keep picking, and let me just take this opportunity while our guest is here, and we'll introduce him in just a moment because he has got a record and a half worth supporting and
Absolutely.
Worth listening to and some great stories. But from the first time you picked the number one Pioneer and we got going, his name was Jankos.
Charlie
not only was a terrific storyteller from day one, but he set a template for the rest of them to follow.
Yep.
So, Harry, no pressure. Harry Bingham is our guest.
Welcome,
He arrived in this country way back in 1982 when I was a mere lad working on a place called SBS. Special, what is it? Soccer, bloody soccer radio station.
That's
No. Our guest, Harry Bingham, was born in Greenock in Scotland.
That's right.
We won't hold that against you. In fact, as George Kotsanis so rightly told me, when you arrived in 82, you were among thousands, many thousands of like-minded Brits who loved the game, who had played the game and were still playing the game and thought there was a new adventure down under.
Very true, very true. My experience when I first arrived, and the president of the club came to pick me up at Melbourne Airport, and he's taking me through Melbourne. I'm going, yes, looks pretty good. This is it. And
then, what was the weather like?
It was.
Everyone keeps bagging the Melbourne weather.
Not bad, actually. But I'm travelling through Melbourne, nice big buildings, pass by St Kilda Beach. So this'll do me. But then we're getting.
You keep driving.
You keep driving, and suddenly there's not too many buildings and. I'm going, where are we going here?
Yes.
And we stopped on the highway for something to eat. And in them days, you didn't have the nice cuisine you had now.
Correct.
There was a hamburger all dripping with sauce. And I'm going, oh, my God, I better eat this. Anyway, we suddenly comes to the Latrobe Valley. And it's open-cut coal mines and it's a little country town. And then we got to the ground, and the ground in them days had the car park you drove in close to the ground. And I'm saying to myself, what have I come to here?
But the training ground or what?
It's just incredible.
But Harry, you fell in love.
I did. I met my wife,
Franca
Morrow. Yes, I met Franca Morrow, and I actually met her the first day I arrived in Australia.
Get out of here. Serious?
Absolutely true, yes.
Well, where did you meet your future wife-to-be?
Well, they told me to come down to the club to meet the committee that night, and funny enough, it was their bingo night. And so I'm sitting there in this little sort of room waiting on the committee to come, and they said, oh, Harry, wait in here in the main room. All the old people's come in for bingo. So my wife came with her mother.
And, of course she did.
And my sister-in-law, actually, she's the player on the team. And they, saw you there. And they thought I was Italian. Them days I was really jet black hair, and I looked apart. So
hang on a second. Harry,
till he
we've got to release a couple of vision, a couple of photos here, because no one will believe this story. Harry Bingham, did you have darker hair, Harry?
Oh, very much so. Very much. And
go
a lot
on.
More.
Keep telling the story.
Yeah, so I met my wife, and things grew from there.
From day one.
Day one. And,
it was meant to be, wasn't it?
I suppose so, yeah. And. And it was one of them things, you know, it was not unlike my hometown in Greenock. Greenock relied on shipbuilding. It was a powerhouse.
Okay.
Big. And then, of course, the economic downturn in the 80s. So
Margaret Thatcher kept closing or nationalising
the various
businesses, yes.
And it affected football. I was a full-time professional footballer when I left school. 2 years later, the club goes part-time. And I go into the shipyards. The club had a lot of directors, and I managed to get me an apprenticeship in the shipyards. But my good friend Neil Orr, and I meet him now, he lives in Australia. I go to the shipyards.
All the good people come down under.
I go to the shipyards and he goes to West Ham. You go, wait a minute, there's a fork in the road here. But the correspondence with Morwell was Morwell power stations and thriving town. The place was buzzing, in short, because there's plenty of work. A lot of people coming from all over Australia for work. And, of course, the soccer club emerged from that. Italian migrants built a club and made it bigger and grew it. And it got admitted to the State League. Hence, there are now allowed visa players. And one of them stories was that it was a Scotsman, Englishman and Irishman again. But, yeah, the story is, you know...
And you were the Scot.
I was the Scot,
Do you remember who the other two were?
Yes. The boy John Bond from Norwich and an Irishman called David Neil from Portadown in Ireland. Two very good players.
So it wasn't a joke. It was... He meant it. They heard the story about the Scot, the Englishman, the Irishman.
There you go.
But it was a wonderful story. I mean, and for you... to be able to say to us, you met your wife-to-be day one.
Yeah.
And here we are all these years later, and the power station, of course, there is going to be closed off or decommissioned, as they loved. It's like a ship.
It's wonderful.
It's been decommissioned.
Yeah.
And the place is different. Businesses are different. But it has a great charm. And if you've never been to that part of Victoria... you need to go because it's very, very different.
Yeah. Oh, George, it holds a special place in my heart. I'll never forget it. My mother and father-in-law still live there, and we go and visit them often. The place is a tired place now, and I go to the... Any time I go to the Falcons ground and stadium. It's still got a little club there, but it's a tired... And it's quite emotional because so many great memories.
I was going to say, I thought George Katsanis told me that you have a plaque down there. You must go down to polish it up, eh? Is that right?
Well, we were a main thing happening on the Troll Valley in sport in the 80s. And the Saturday nights or Saturday afternoons, they would come from Warrigal, Sale, Moy, everywhere to watch the game. It was a main event. And, of course, we won the championship twice. So the Shire... made a bronze plaque of the team. So when you go to Morwell, I'm immortalised in bronze in Morwell.
There you go.
There you go.
It was
well
special.
Worth the trip 36 years ago just for that, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, George tells me that it's not just your playing days. You came on a working visa as a footballer, as a sportsman. Those things aren't readily handed out these days. So unique opportunity. But you grasped it with both hands.
Yeah, I think if you think of economy and work industry and work means to people, and that suddenly goes away. So Scotland was a country just finishing. You come to Australia, a country just beginning. That's what it felt like. And you know, the club got you a job. We were all semi-professional in them days, and I hadn't worked. I was a footballer. So then I got a job in the power station and out working, and I was making, you know, good money for a young man, and I needed it because I got married and had a family and all the reality of things. And then football becomes a challenge when you're part-time because the club's still paying you, but you now are married, you've got a home, you've got kids, you've got responsibilities. And devoting that time, and we were four times a week at one time because we had Melbourne players. So we'd do two here and two in Melbourne. And then go to work and play the weekend. It was very demanding, very demanding.
You would have been very fit. Probably explains why you've gone grey.
I've not gone that grey. I think football fitness is a special thing for the game. And some of it's got to be understood now in the sports science methods, whereas general fitness and fitness for other things is its own type of fitness. And I've got a great respect for sports science. I took a great interest in it. But for football specifics, that's the part I would like to see applied rather than generic things that help you look better rather than make your game better, if you know what I mean.
Mm. George, would love to know, of course, take you back to your days in Scotland. Your first junior club?
I was a Rangers boys club player, would you believe? And everybody thought I was going to sign for Glasgow Rangers. They took me on tour. I was a captain of the team, and it was all expected to happen. But it kept not happening, and I was sort of saying, my dad kept saying, sign with your local club, they want you. I said, what, it's too small, it's the Rangers, it's Rangers or Celtic in Scotland. So I kept this denial going on. But to be fair, in between, I'd like a lot of boys, I just missed out on the Scottish schoolboys. I was always just missing out. In the last trial, I went down to Tottenham, I went to Aston Villa, I went to Ipswich.
What was it like in those days? I mean, you're talking about some of the biggest clubs of not only Britain, but as we're seeing now, Spurs now in the top 10 of the biggest brands in the world.
You're a young kid, and it was quite an achievement just to get asked to come for a trial or a weekend training, because basically you're playing with your club and the scouts come and watch games, and then they get in touch with you and ask if you come down, and I went down for these games, young kid on a train, but I'll never forget the Leeds team at the time was special, you know, there was all them big names. And
Talking about the Lorimer times?
Yeah, that's Lorimer, Eddie Gray, Lorimer. Yeah. A lot of Scots in the team, great, a lot of Bremner was there. And
Hunter?
Frankie Gray.
Hunter who breaks legs.
Didn't have. And one of the things, it shocked me, Aston Villa. So I say, right, kid, you know, it's like the movie Goal. Go and get the gear. So I'm going to get the gear, and the two apprentices there, polish, well, you want your little, get back to Scotland, don't you? And I went, okay.
So there was that, plenty of that resentment.
It's all that. But
you're threatening their job, is that right?
I don't know what it is, but you've got to deal with it. But I remember I went back, and he says, right, so in the centre circle, the Aston Villa first team players, they're knocking the ball around. They put me in the middle and I've got to get it off them. I must have been in there 20 minutes and never get a kick. And then I come back and the guy says, right, you go over there. You know,
could you believe that the trials and tribulations of Aston Villa in the last few years? One of the, and you need to help us here, it's seriously one of the biggest clubs in Britain, isn't it? In terms of ground, fan support. Oh. It's huge.
Birmingham,
it's huge.
Big city. Big in England cities. And big clubs.
And they expect
and
something.
Expectations high. Yeah. It's same with Newcastle. Massive club. And expectations high. And yet, something goes amiss, George. Whatever it is, you would expect clubs like that planning to be better. Because smaller clubs with less support. I mean, if you look at the Leicester story.
Great story.
Going, okay, well, Leicester can do it, Newcastle can't, Aston Villa can't. So you ask the question, so where does it go wrong? And somewhere, it's in the planning, it's in the organisation, it's in whatever you want to say. It's not all on the field, it's everything comes together in a moment. And I think that's the great stories in football.
Yeah, your trialling days, Ipswich, Aston Villa, in that period, they were like powerhouses. Ipswich were a very strong side. Aston Villa, European champions at one stage, right? So we're talking about, you know, we weren't going to small clubs. But the cockiness that you thought you were going to get in, end up at Rangers, did you take the wrong attitude perhaps to those trials, or did you just get there and realise that perhaps you weren't good enough? Or did it
that's
take...
That's a good point. You sort of assume... You're a Rangers Boys Club player. You're going to sign with Rangers. It's all going to happen.
Yeah.
And there's an expectation in your age group amongst your peers. You're the kind of young, good player that's in the newspapers and all these things. So I think there is an expectation. That's who you want to sign for. But if any of them clubs had offered me a contract, I would have signed. Ipswich actually told me to come back and wanted me to come back. And my dear mum said, I don't want my son to go to England and these things. So you presume because... you're getting opportunities that one will come a-knocking because of it. So I don't think arrogance is a word. What I think is the truth now, George, is they're not stupid, these people. You're just not good enough, or there's better players at the time.
Yep.
It kept motivating me that I would get something else. But certainly I remember at the time they were very good players. They were very good players who I thought were more accomplished and better than what I was. So the Ipswich one was actually, it was a talent ID weekend, one of the first of its kind. There must have been 200 to 300 players from all over the UK. And it was about 40 minutes, a game, a bit of training, And then, okay, we'll get back in touch with you.
but
they did.
Yep.
And asked me to come back, which was the Tottenham one was just like the Super City, just overwhelming. Yeah, you're going. They actually took us to a place to play a practice match in Weston Supermare, which is an English holiday resort. I think that's been charming, Colin. at the time they're overwhelming. I think that's the best because you expect and you're nervous and you're. But looking back, it just wasn't good enough, and that's the truth of the matter. And you deal with that, yeah.
But you know, you can say that today. Because you've also gone on as a player and become a coach.
Yeah.
Now, we want to find out from you what it takes to be a coach, what drove you to be a coach, and some of the life lessons that along the way you picked up that you're now imparting to some of the others. We'll talk about that in just a moment. We're talking to Harry Bingham. It's part of FNR's The Pioneers program. It's George Denikian along with George Katsanis. And if you have not sampled the program before, it's every Thursday night on Football Nation Radio. And more importantly, if you miss it or you come in halfway through, you can always grab the podcast on SoundCloud. Back with more in a moment.
No call! Score!
Salamini for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a Trimboli, what vision!
Math blasts.
Yes, and Zic.
Miljevic.
Here's Bozanic. They haven't. They might have won it.
The Pioneers with George Denikian and George Kotsanis on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back. The Pioneers, you're with the G1 and G2.
Aki Kotsimihalis last week gave us a brand new title, G1 and G2. Who's G1 and who's G2.
That's because I know who's G1.
Okay, George.
Now behave. We're with our special guest on the Pioneers on Football Nation Radio, Harry Bingham. Harry, let's talk about the playing days at Morwell, that very, very strong side.
Yeah.
Titles, cups, great players.
Yeah. Some super players.
Super players.
Morwell was, again, it's like I said to George before, when you first arrive there, you're going, this is a small town. How's it got a football club? And then the football club envelopes everything in the town. Everything. Wonderful. One of the things I've always loved in Australia, I love ethnic diversity. I love the
different... You get plenty of it in Australia.
Yeah, but it's a strength. And it's still not harnessed to its full potential. And we may have let it go when we were getting somewhere with it. So Morwell represented it like anywhere else.
Yep.
There's little clubs in Morwell that represent every community. There's Dutch clubs, Maltese clubs, Greek clubs, Italian clubs, in a little tiny place like that.
A microcosm of what Melbourne is.
Yes. So
what Australia is, too.
That's it, George. And so... Morwell always had ambitions. They had a wonderful entrepreneur, Don Di Fabrizio, who made it his dream to make this club all the way to the National League. And, of course, people are going, no, it's a regional area. So I guess the story goes they get admitted to the State League and then they're allowed visa players and they start bringing visa players, and I was one of them. But there was far better players than me at Morwell, a pair of players I played with.
And Billy Whiteside, Jim McLean, Steve Moore, Alan Evans, Billy Wright, Effie Casser, Ron Manley, Sean Byrne, Emil Bruns, and Bob McGuinness. Just some of the memorable players that you really enjoyed playing with.
Yeah,
and you playing against a bit.
George, you play with good players, they'll make you a good player. You play against good players, you become a good player. You have to play with good players. You have to keep advancing. And so Morwell kept this. The first year I came here, they were expecting to get relegated. We made the top four. We made the finals. Lost to Green Gully, I think, 3-0 at Olympic Park. The following year, so they decided in 1983 to go for it. And they signed a lot of big names. But it was one of them ones, we signed the big names, but they don't gel together as a team. Got a new coach, Tony Bodgy, ex-Australian international coach, but it was not a good year. And I had come as a midfielder, but we had so many problems in defence. They slotted me back in at right back and stuff. But we really started to struggle until we got Alan Evans released from South Melbourne. End of his career, but what a professional player.
Tell us more about him, because I'm going to... do everything I can to get Alan on this show. At the moment, he's overseas and uncontactable, but I won't die wondering. But I want to know, for someone who played with him.
Yeah.
What made him special, other than the super brain?
The gentleman. Sportsman, and some incredible stories.
By the way, on Facebook, Savas Saglam says, legend and gentleman for Harry Bingham. So, you know, good company.
Alan Evans was, I tell you how excited I was. I'd actually been a kid in Scotland watching Liverpool in the old Fair Cities Club, Europa.
Yeah,
and he scored two goals against Bayern Munich as an under-21 player. And I'm going, look at this guy. And then I'm getting to play with him in Australia, and I'm a wee bit in awe, you know. He had broken his leg
quite badly.
Melbourne, very badly, and he'd come to Morlaix. He'd recovered, he'd come to Morlaix, but time had moved on. But he became a coach on the field. And they'd put me at right back at this time, all, and I didn't like hitting longer balls. I was always trying to chip a man. So now I found somebody that could hold it and shield it. He was fantastic at shielding a ball. Very strong, small, squat body. And he'd always tell you, but he says, no, I'm going to hold it, but once you've played it, come on to me.
Yeah,
I'll give
follow,
it back.
Follow me up.
And I'm going, okay.
Give me a release point.
Yeah, because I was always sitting told to contain and stop wingers, but now I was to go forward. And he encouraged me overlap, and we came back, and we finished at mid-table, but he revived us. But the horrible thing was, the horrible story, he broke his leg again. And I'll never forget it. He had turned and copped a bump from behind, nothing in it, and the game went
it
on.
It looked innocuous, huh?
He went down. Anyway, the game went out of play, and I walked up, and I said, "You all right, Al?" He said, "No, Harry, my leg's broke." And I'm saying, looks all right to me, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, "Hang my leg."
But he knew.
He says, "When a physio got put the stretcher here," and he says, "and you go on my shoulder," and he got another Tony Van Baar, my brother-in-law, he's passed on now. He said, "You take my hip, and just flip me over when I tell you." And we're going, okay. So he's telling us this, and he goes, "Right, on a count of three, one, two, three," and we flipped him, and he screamed. And then you saw the bone come out just between the hamstring. Never broke the skin, it was all.
Yeah.
And he was face down the stretcher. And I was saying, this is a guy with real experience about injuries. It's been there, done that. Anyway, he finished, but he'd always phone me up. "How are you doing? How are you going?" And he would tell me, he says, "Look, release it early if you're under pressure. If you've got time, always take a touch, compose yourself, and decide where you're going to be." And I always took that on board. He said, "If you're close and you're under pressure in the back third, release it. If you've got time, take a touch and look. That'll compose you and make you make a better decision." And these are a lot of coaching things that you need to get from inside the game, George.
I saw it firsthand. I used to get that exactly thing from Bobby McGuinness. So I understand and appreciate exactly what you're talking about. It makes such a difference.
You're imparting that sort of information now to the next crop of youngsters coming through.
Yeah, because I think these are the parts they need. They don't need the sanitised, you know, we're playing a back four, I'll step out and play offside. They need to know why. And
no, I love what you're saying, but I'm going to run some names past you. Word Association, we do it each and every week. John Markowski, these are people you coached. Come on.
Don't use lazy because everyone
knows. Yeah, don't say lazy because he's a superstar.
People can say lazy, but if there's anyone going to score a goal when they get a chance, there's that man. He'll frustrate you. I remember a time I was coaching him. And I was ready to take him off. He literally never had a touch in the first 42 minutes of the game. We're playing Brisbane Roar. And that's Frank Ferrier territory. You know, I'm saying, oh, for goodness sake, I've had enough of him. And I'm telling the manager, right, get ready to take him off. We'll put the young kid on, young boy called Carlo Villani. I really love the kid. Yeah. Give everyone he's got, score goals, but, you know, miss, you know, two out of five sort of thing. And I'm ready to take him off. And then we're under pressure, but we've broken up the attack, and the goalkeeper takes a goal kick. He just gives it a punt, and it's going to go out for. He sliced it. It's going out for a throw-in for the opposition. Jonesy, who's left-footed, sticks his right foot out before it's on and pulls it down one touch. Alan Hunter, I think it was, comes out to do him, and he lobs it over him. Out comes Danny Wright, slices it around him, and he's at the edge of the box. Then he's got a lot to do. But what he's doing, he bends at far top right corner. And I'm about to take them off my head.
So suddenly you look like a genius.
Oh, but he just did that.
He had it in his
He was a guy he needed.
He had it in the locker.
Yeah. Big time.
You needed to understand, and I was too young a coach. I was into this discipline organisation structure because I just had learned about coaching courses and stuff, and I wanted to apply all this. But then I found, no, you don't do it to this guy. And he was a great guy. He was a great character. But people paid money to come and watch John Markowski.
Correct. He was a player. Yeah, well.
Well, he's coaching now. And he's, you know.
He's getting his own back now.
Yeah, he's getting okay. Speaking of getting your own back, Warren Spink.
Warren Spink was a supreme professional. But if anybody crossed Warren Spink, then Warren Spink crossed him.
So Warren, short fuse, Spink.
Yeah, but what a good little player. A very intelligent player about moments, you know, waiting for a moment, realising. He would always want the ball. When I make a move, come back, that's when I want you to play it. I don't want it in my feet, I want it beyond. Or if I'm behind, I'm coming, I want it in my feet. And he would try to give signals to players. And players, lesser players, couldn't pick up the cues. Ernie Tapai picked up the cues, and the two would combine, do 1-2s. Ernie Tapai, very explosive, very dynamic player, could change a game. And Markowski, Spink, and Tapai, we made the finals that year, but them three were a sort of team within the team. They could carry you, get you through tough moments in the game. Great players.
Young Fijian boy, Asala Masai.
Yeah. Just one of them. We were going through the second year in the NSL, starting to struggle about, needed an outlet, needed a goal scorer. And the Olympics was on here.
This is 2000 we're talking about.
Yes. Now. So I said to the, I said, look, I'm going to go up and watch some games, see the very young players. I was going to look at the Australian team. But then this boy, Masai, I'm saying, look at this guy. Athlete, touch, finesse, better than his teammates. A great athlete. I said, I'm going to get this guy down. We brought him to Morwell and he revived us.
Wow. No and culture shock for him.
No, brilliant player. He'd do everything. But the first night at training, he comes out in his bare feet and he's smacking the balls around. I said, no, you've got to put boots on. No, I don't need boots on. I said, look, you need to put boots on. I says, I know you don't, but another player might stand on you or do something.
Break your leg.
That's legendary stuff, that is.
That's fantastic,
out.
Eh?
He was some player.
Caleb Patterson.
Caleb Patterson, an interesting one. He was a boy I discovered in Queensland. And Caleb was a young goalkeeper, 14-year-old. And, you know, awkward-looking, but kid travelled. So I was in Toowoomba. He was coming from a Lockyer Valley. So imagine the travelling, up every day.
He was committed, though.
A little kid, three times a week, wanted to do extra training. So I would travel and do a little bit of training with him. And had a tough time. Parents separated and brought him, very difficult for him. Mum, interesting enough, got a job in America, in Hollywood, doing hair and makeup stuff. So Caleb starts going to America. But he's made the Queensland State team now, and he's starting. He signs with Brisbane Roar, but he moved to America, and it's been a success story. I think he's playing New York Red Bulls, maybe. At the
yeah,
moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Played in Portugal with Benfica.
It's not a bad part to put in your CV, George Katsanis.
I can handle that on my resume.
And
yeah.
He gets in touch with a nicer kid, but he's into his Aussie heritage, and he's got a family now. But one of them kids that does the extra yards. From being ordinary, make themselves better.
Got the rewards too.
Yeah, yeah.
Driven.
Jamie McLaren was one of your things. There's a story, and topical.
Yeah.
Right on the money.
So I started working at VIS with Ian America. It would give me a lot of time. I'd go and do workshops to learn a lot about sports science. But Ian Greener's now in charge, and he says, I want to get the assistant work done. I want to work on blocks, so defence, midfield, attack, and then go back, do it defensively, do it attackingly. He says, can you come in and help? And I'm delighted. And young McLaren was breathtakingly fast, strike it from any angle, anywhere, didn't need to get his head up, knew where the goal was. He was scoring goals for fun. In fact, we went to Germany on a tour and we played against the German national under 16s, and that's the boy at Arsenal's playing. German player, midfielder.
Mesut Ozil.
Ozil's playing that game. And we've lost the game 3-1, but McLaren scored, and he's hit the crossbar. And then we've played, the next game we've played United Arab Emirates, 2-2, he scores two. And Nick Ansell's in the team at the time, but it's McLaren's going from right to left and free roaming. He's not tied down. I'm letting him do it. And he's getting into the other areas where players are there because he's hungry for the ball. So it never ever surprised me. And he actually, what disappointed myself and Ian Greener, we recommended him for the AIS and they didn't take him on. We recommended him for the Joeys, they didn't take him on. In actual fact, he was capped for Scotland, the Joeys, because his father, Donnie, has got heritage. So then Australia says, well, we'll have a look at this boy in case, and they got him back. So he scored three goals against Rangers last week, a 5-5 game against Hibs. He's got a hat-trick. He scored 9 in the last 3-4 games. I think he's on form. I think it's somebody...
So what's your feeling about that?
Yeah,
being left out of this soccer,
I think you can't go past goal scorers in any form, George. Mm. If you say John Markowski's lazy, we say that, but the guy's a proven goal scorer and a proven man.
They're difference makers, aren't they?
And you've got to carry them, George. Again, goals is difficult in our game.
Well, especially for Australia. If we've had one Achilles moment, bit of our makeup that we're short on, it's striking.
Yeah.
When we had a real goal poacher, you revere them. There was a guy called Jimmy Greaves that made a name for himself at Chelsea and Spurs,
yes.
Superstar.
Yes.
A guy called Harry Kane,
yes.
Who knows where the goals are.
Yeah.
And they are remarkable. Mohamed Salah,
yeah.
Who came from Roma, everyone thought he was going to be a bench player, and he could well win the Ballon d'Or. I mean, that's extraordinary.
But you're right, and in ordinary teams sometimes, and Morlow had some ordinary teams, but they're always good strikers. You're talking about Billy Wright and Ron Manley. Billy Wright is another people, controversial, could upset anybody, the crowd, the supporters, his own teammates, but the guy could score.
New Zealand,
well, Diego Costa at Atletico Madrid, but also at Chelsea, that's what he did. He annoyed the heck out of the opposition defences, but boy, did he make a difference. And the minute he's gone, isn't that wonderful line? You don't know what you've got until you've lost it. And the minute Chelsea lost, they lost an awful lot of their firepower up front. And I don't mean that inability to score. I'm talking the ability to agitate and create havoc. And he did all that by being a nuisance. And also being a finisher. Another guy who's currently in the news and someone you know very well, Bally Wright.
Bally Wright was another VIS boy and a prominent quality defender then. Standard.
So why have we cut him?
You know, okay, you'll get a change of coach. Do you get a change of heart? I think any previous coach has done good things, and we shouldn't always look at sort of negatives. There's always good work that a previous coach has done. I think Bailey Wright, I think Ange Postecoglou started to give him a confidence back in himself that maybe he was losing by not getting international recognition. I thought he was a steady, competent player. I thought his last game was poor. The last game,
but he played out of position.
Yeah, he did. But I think he's a boy. You're playing in that championship regularly every week. He's been in a couple of English Cup finals. You're playing a good quality of football. You're going to go to the World Cup. There's players like that you'd want to be some reliability on.
Is his pace maybe a problem?
Pace is certainly something you would consider. His reading the game makes up for it. In a full-back position, I think
yep.
He could be exposed.
Okay.
Centrally, second defender, I think he'd be okay.
Some of the things that you also mentioned, people like Jack Hingett, Nicky Ansell, you mentioned earlier, Matthew Fascini, Johnny Hutchinson, really, really wonderful players,
yeah.
And all offering something new. What are the sorts of things you're looking for in players? You've talked about attitude,
yep.
Which I think is key.
Yep.
And you've said it to Georgie. In fact, Mr. Katsanis here, when he was in his playing days, was a driven winger.
Yep.
Someone who wanted to be better and make himself better every time. Is that the first thing you look at? Their drive, their attitude?
One thing will come through with a young player, George, and it's the same as what we've got sitting right here. What never leaves us, why we are sitting here, is a love of the game. The love of the game is the attribute you have to have as a player, as a coach, as a committee man at the club, as a supporter. It's a common bond. It's the love of the game. When you keep the negative of the game, when you keep having a whinge about the game, okay, what is that? You said before, you need to analyse your game. You need to go back and say, I could have taken a touch. I should have hit it first time. Players will do that. Players will finesse the game, learning from that game to make the next game better. So you'll see things with young players. It shows you that love and passion of the game. Then there's the regularity. Caleb Patterson wanted to train more. The boy Daniel Allsop lived away up in Dandenong somewhere. He's travelling to the VIS 4 nights a week. He's got to get a bus and a train and another bus to get to training.
Charlie Yankos did a similar thing as a young boy.
So these
hours
things,
to get there.
These things tell you about desire and ambition, and then putting a process in that to achieve that ambition. I've seen many players who have talent, technically gifted, athletically superior, but take it for granted. And then when the opportunity comes along, and it's a favourite saying of mine, opportunity comes once, probably. And there's people who never see it and never take it. There's the people who see it and still don't take it. And then there's the very, 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 very few who see it, take it, go with it, realise where it is. They're the kids who are going to get there. They'll outlast. They'll stay the distance. They'll overcome the setbacks, the disappointments, the rejections. They are part of development. You have to deal with them. You're not going to go in a nice upward trend. It's all going to get ticked off. You're going to fall down. You're not going to get picked. You're going to get played out of position. You're going to lose games. You're going to be under a bad coach. Can you deal with it in the journey? And if you can, you'll get there.
We talk about your coaching. Head coach at Wesley School, Caulfield Grammar head coach, Camberwell Grammar year 8 and I think year 9 too head coach, Nazareth College head coach, Lions, Bulleen Lions technical director. And you've had a job there with young John Mazzano, who we had in the studio a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he's trying to do something very special, trying to get Bulleen not only to start playing a certain style of football, but to be really competitive.
Yeah, he's a great competitor.
He's fearsome, isn't he?
The boy epitomises some of the things that we've just talked about as a player.
Spot on. That lad could have went
to the very top, and he made a couple of wrong decisions. And he got there, but he never went.
But he's honest.
And he does. So he's now learning. He's going to put his passion back into football and offer something to players, and he'll do that. But I do like not just I'm now the coach, now I'm a coach, the first step is this and so your job is to support young coaches as well as young players, and you got to be there for them because they'll deal with all the emotions. As you both well know, George, the game's about emotion. It's not about logic. You're dealing with the emotions of supporters, people, opinions, who sit comfortably away from making them decisions. So you have to be strong, you have to have thick skin, and you have to deal with the fallout, but keep believing as you did as a player to get on that journey of success. And success has got to have some failures before you reach it.
You're listening to Harry Bingham speaking like a coach on the Pioneers. We'll have more from Harry very, very shortly. It's our favourite Thursday night program on Football Nation Radio. And Harry is letting us into the inner sanctum, giving us a sense of what he wants from his young players. And what we want from Harry when we come back is to touch again where you reached before, and you said when you had Johnny Markovsky, you wanted to get him to play a particular way. You were too young as a coach. We'll touch on that and how things have turned around. Ladies and gentlemen, the Pioneers.
Bucciales, no call! Score!
Salamini for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a Trimboli, what vision!
Math blasts.
Yes, Edzic.
Miljevic.
Here's Bozanic. They haven't. They might have won it.
The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
back to the Pioneers. You're with the G1 and G2 and Harry Bingham, who I just, before we move on, I just want to state two State League Championship titles, the Doherty Cup winners, two Player of the Year and one Player's Player of the Year. So it wasn't like you were just on the coattails of everyone else down there. You were a big part of what was going on down at Morwell, and the club was very successful. So for the Statos out there, this bloke won things with the team and individually.
And Twitter's telling us, best back four at Morwell. Clark, Bruns, Bingham, Gotis. Great days.
Did that come from,
incredible,
George?
Sorry. Manny Gotis.
Oh, good player. Good player.
Now, on Sunday, we're going to let Greg Blake loose on the NSL show. Brand new show here. Now, you played in the NSL. You must have some good memories of your times at Morwell in the NSL.
You know, when Morwell went to the NSL, the thing become sort of surreal because suddenly you're thinking you've got a tiny regional town taking on major cities in Australia at football. So you're taking on Brisbane, you're taking on Sydney, you're taking on Adelaide. These are big events. And then these teams are coming to Morwell, and they've got Australian internationals in the team. So the thing is on a showpiece, and it was quite exceptional. My first year of it was, I was mainly coaching a youth team, and I didn't see the opportunity coming for another 2 or 3 years. I certainly wanted to get there, but I wasn't fussed about it. But Bobby McLaughlin, a great character,
yep,
he would take me on the bench all the time and let me sit and observe, and I'd sit and watch players and camp players. And he'd turn and ask you, what do you think here, Harry? You think we'll take him and try that? He was really good, really.
Made you feel involved.
Yeah, yeah. And he was a part of it all, and he had a great eye for a player, Bobby. Bobby knew a good player, and he could put good players together. Often individuals were strong, and you get a lot of brawls in dressing rooms, George, but he put together good teams. But he left early. It was all getting too much. And in that particular year, you played three games. I think it was the Ericsson Cup. Ericsson was the sponsor. And we had to play three games to be some sort of more entertainment and more of their value, part of the sponsorship. And we're getting a lot of draws. And we couldn't get the win, and we were getting a draw and a draw and a draw. And they were accumulating, and we're starting to drop. So Bobby stepped in, and they thought, 7-8 games to go, we'll wrap it up for this year, we'll give a plan next year, and we'll just let Harry take over. And it kind of caught me out because the youth team is doing really well. I was really excited. Manny Gorris, young boy Hutchinson, Emil Bruns, Effie, because they're local boys coming from a country area, and now they're playing in the National League. That in itself,
for their own team, for their own,
exactly,
part of the woods, huh?
And in itself, it's a big achievement. And now I'm a local now. I've lived there,
yep,
70 years. I've become a local myself. And so you're feeling that.
You're understanding it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're feeling it.
And the Melbourne players will come, and they're great lads, but they'll go away again. But you're living with it in the street, and you can't get out.
Yep.
And so it's really like that kind of feeling. So I've taken over, and there's a nice little bit of publicity. Had a bit of taking over. Local player makes good. But we're sort of expected to fade away and... But suddenly we had a form run, don't we? And, of course, it's your man Markowski. He's a quiet spell. Suddenly he's gone. But Warren Spinks stepped up. He's starting to score goals. Tapai's starting to form. I've introduced this young boy, Carlo Villani. And suddenly, our next game is away at Wollongong, and we thrash them 4-1.
This is the Wolves that were a pretty good football team. Thank you very much.
Really good. Oh, good players. Next game is at home against the Brisbane Roar. I don't think we're called Brisbane Roar.
Brisbane Strikers, that's right.
And they've got a good coach. Bruce Stiles, the coach, great coach, knows the game. And I'm a young coach. I'm in all of these people, actually. And we've beaten them 5-1. And it's the Markowski show. He's just turning it on. And he's going around the keeper for one of the goals. And he's a little dink. And it's all fantastic. And then I bring a young boy off the bench, Marcus Stergiopoulos. Another young boy from Sale. And this young boy had travelled and tried to make a career in football and was unlucky, but he went to England, one of the big places.
Yep.
And I said, I'll give this kid a go. And this kid thrived, and he became a prominent player. So now we are sitting sixth, and we get two games to go. And We win. No, we draw with West Adelaide, which keeps us in contention.
The Sharks were a good team.
Good side. Raoul Blanco was my favourite coach in them. They played a style
top
of football.
Guy, yeah.
Then we've got Branko. Branko's team's sitting fifth. They go to the finals.
Sydney United.
Branko, a good friend and a good team.
And on our show next week, just for as a reminder.
Yeah, okay. A lot of time from a young, good coach of his day and pioneered the game well and his style of coaching. So we're expected to lose to Sydney. Great side. But we've beaten them 3-1 at home and suddenly we're in the finals.
And
it's just a shock. And that town is an English FA Cup.
Well, it would have been like Newcastle this year, the Jets.
Yeah.
You know, Laurie McKenna took him on a journey along with Ernie Merrick, who you spoke about.
Yes.
This is the same Ernie Merrick everyone has written off because he's got the use-by date.
Yeah.
What did you make of that?
I never surprised with Ernie Merrick. He's a very shrewd man, very calculated person, great planner. Picks good players and picks good teams around him, Ernie Merrick. Ernie Merrick will let people do the work and he'll just drive it. Very, very good organiser. And Lorna McKenna's a charming, get people going. So that's a great team there. We talked before about maybe Newcastle, Aston Villa. That's the things that go on around the club that maybe can help on the field. And maybe that's a magic formula. So, yeah. Going back to the Morwell one, it was like that. It was all happening. And it was, you couldn't go. We had every reporter was calling me up and I was getting the new kid on the block. And all I was struggling to deal with it, actually. Yeah. It was, I couldn't go. So my wife and I, every Sunday, we'd go for take our kid for a walk in the pram and take the dog and all. Usually, we couldn't do it. The people
following you around.
Over, my wife was getting asked questions. What's the team going to be? It was too small a community. It was just. It's not like a big city where you can. It's a tight community and everybody's into this whole thing.
So the fishbowl.
But they engaged. But they engaged, and that's what you want, isn't it?
Just unbelievable. The story ended. We played South Melbourne. It was interesting. South Melbourne, we were the first leg at home, and South Melbourne couldn't play at Olympic Park. So Frank Arrow gives me a call. All of a sudden, I'm talking to Frank Arrow, who I had a great respect for. And he says, look, we can't play the game. Can we play the first game at your ground? And we'll play the second game away. We are going to get the second game. And I'm a nice young coach. Yes. Well, the club's going to tell me that's the, we've got home advantage. Anyway, we played at home. We lost 1-0. Jonesy goes off injured after about 20 minutes. And there was the effect. Suddenly, he'd become bigger than the team. And the team believed Jonesy, if Jonesy's on, we'll be all right. And he went off and he gets injured. And we lose the game 1-0, and we're okay getting into the second leg. But there's a question mark in Jonesy and Tapai now, both get injuries. We play the second leg, I made an error. I tried to stop Peterson because he was flowing and knocking things around.
This is Mickey P.
Yeah, and I said, I'll put the young boy Gary Upton on. And I took our playmaker, John Waddell, out of the team. He still ribs me about it to this day. And it was a bad move because I was too concentrate and try to stop them, but actually stopped us. Mm. And then Paul Tremboli and Butsaris were
great side. Interesting. You just touched on something. You didn't play your game. You allowed yourself to play their game.
And it's a fatal. You learn it very quick in coaching. One of the things about coaching, we get this mythology that we'll plan for them and they'll do this. And side story is, I've done it in Adelaide. Adelaide in them days had Ivanovic, Tobin, Vidmar. I think the boy was Shilabier. Quality. Play it for the back.
Great side.
Zoran and Matic. Oh, and I'm a young coach going into this, and I'm saying, oh, who did that? So I said, well, stop them playing out for the back. I watched them. So I'm working all week. I shouldn't have done it with Jonesy, Warren Spink, a young boy called Scott Miller. I says, look, stand on Ivanovic, stand on Vidmar, let Tobin have it, let Alec have it. He give it away. We'll win it, and then we'll win it there. So we're planning on when we're working this in training. This was our game plan. We'll stop there. But, of course, I never had what we do when we're in it. When we get it, what do we do? Don't worry. So we're playing the game. And I've got the team list before the game. I've planned all week. And Vidmar's not playing. And Vanovic's not playing. Shilabar's not playing. So Spink says, what are we doing now? I said, I don't know. And so you're absolutely right. Planning for the opposition, you have no control over that. You don't know what the team is going to be. You don't know so many factors. So you have an idea, you have when they do this, we'll maybe stop that. But you've got to plan on your team and what you can and can't do and what you should and what you think is the main focus. You don't know about the opposition. I had a great conversation last week with Chris Taylor, who's taken over at Oakley, and they played...
And doing league. A really good job.
Ah, good coach. A winner. Winning coach. And he mentioned that to me. He said after the game, Harry, he says, your team's a development team. You've got 4 17-year-olds in there, and I'm going to stay with the club. I win things, and I make sure it's going to happen because of this. And I think that is exactly a good plan. If you've got that, we can do this, nothing of that. And he said that. And that's very true. You need to plan around your circumstances, your abilities, your staff, your capabilities, and then look for the game to take care of itself.
Now, we're going to run out of time. We do every week. And you've done some amazing things. You went and worked in Fiji with the young teams.
17s, the 20s, and the Olympic team. Yeah. Fantastic job.
And you work with the Fury.
Yes.
In the A-League. Yep. So you've done it, and it's just not enough. But I just want to know, now you're currently working with the West Ham Academy. Well, tell us about that and what your role is.
Yep.
And whether this morning's sacking of David Moyes is opening up another opportunity for you overseas.
Well, Harry Bingham Sr. will be very happy to know that.
Yes. Yeah, West Ham. I'll tell you how West Ham came about. I've got a friend called George Cowie, ex-West Ham player. Played there about 7 years. And he became the technical director of Queensland when I was the technical director of Victoria. And we'd meet at the national championships where all these players, McLaren and the Bailey Wrights, would take part. And so what he's done, West Ham come to Australia and conduct coaching clinics with their staff.
Yep.
And I'll get in and work with them. And then they'll have a national camp on the Gold Coast. So all these players from all around Australia get invited to the national camp, the better ones, and New Zealand. And then the selected ones from there will go to West Ham for...
Talent acquisition.
Yep. Mm. So they're into it. And it's a genuine one. It's a real guys. It's, you know, I'm sure you've heard of all the other ones.
Yeah.
So it's a real West Ham guys. They run it. They control it. It's their syllabus. West Ham's basic role of their academy, they talk about playing in the future, which means know what you're going to do the ball before you get it.
Yeah, instinctive football.
Yep. So that's what they do. Now, they've just signed a young boy, Kyle McGeachy, on a two-year in the academy for 2 years, and a real success story. Young boy was at Melbourne City, and I think he was doing okay. I don't think Melbourne City... But he got this opportunity, and he's taken it, and he's there. And I'll actually see him this year when they come over. The West Ham coaches are coming out now in July, and it's an open thing for any kids. It's not exclusive. It's any kid can come to the clinic, take part, boys and girls, but they'll identify, and then they'll invite them to the national camp, and from there they'll go to the UK. And it's a good experience. They play games against all the other clubs.
When these camps start, you might get the boys from the preview show or the review show to have a chat about some of the talent that you're likely to see and who's made an impact. So thanks for joining us.
Get you back on again. Yep. Again, apologies that this hour flies and we don't get to mention everything and cover everything, but it's been a pleasure to have you in, and thank you so much for coming in.
G1, G2, saying a big thank you to Harry Bingham, who's been our pioneer on this version of the Pioneers on Football Nation Radio. Until next week.
Absolutely.
No call! Score!
Salamini for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a rocket! Trimboli, what vision!
Marth blasts.
Yes! And Zic!
Miljevic.
Here's Bozanic. They haven't! They might have won it!
The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR, Football Nation Radio.